I worked in a dark room 16 hours a day. My fingers were black from the chemicals. My skin was sallow. My eyes were dark. But I learned to make a good print.
Bill Abronowitz is a renowned photographer who started snapping pictures 50 years ago. Bill's career has taken him around the globe many times over, taking pictures for the likes of Condé Nast Traveler, the New York Times Magazine, Vanity Fair, Architectural Digest, Vogue, Bon Appetit, Martha Stewart Living, and the list goes on. In his latest photography book, Country Life, Bill turns his camera on our very own Catskills and a portfolio of 20 homes of the Catskill Mountains and Hudson Valley. Welcome to CatsCast. This week, a conversation with Bill Abronowitz from his and wife Andrea's home in Margaretville, New York.
My name is Bill Abronowitz. I am a photographer, and we're sitting in the living room of my home in Margaretville, New York. I have been a photographer for 50 years. This coming year, I turned 67. I started when I was 17. I majored in economics at Rutgers for a couple of years, took a photography class, immediately transferred to the School of Visual Arts, started taking classes at night, worked for a number of photographers, George Tice, a master printer from New Jersey, a wonderful photographer of the urban landscape. I became a freelance printer. Then I was asked to print for Horst P. Horst, the fashion photographer. And then he asked me to assist him. And I was, you know, in my 30s by then and kind of ready to get over it. Assisting just seemed too attractive to work with a legendary photographer like that. He was 83 when I started working with him. So I started doing that for a few years. And then I got an artist residency at Peters Valley in Sussex County, New Jersey, and discovered the wonders of a rural area. And I was still printing at that time, and I got tired of printing other people's negatives. And I thought, I want to survive on my own doing my photography. And the gallery thing was working pretty well. And then it just collapsed in the 90s. So my wife, Andrea, she's a well-trained salesperson, worked for Time Inc. for, you know, selling ad space for People magazine for a number of years, and decided to take my portfolio around. It was never ready. You know, typical artists, I can't show it, it's not ready. She just took it in, got one assignment. There was a big call for fine art photographers to do a commercial gig, and I got an ad campaign. My wife was able to negotiate a credit, and a commercial career took off. Commerce is, it's a necessary thing, and I enjoyed doing what I did. I never felt like I sold out. I did a couple times maybe, but I was involved with Martha Stewart in the first issue. When I met her, she had 3 people in her company. A couple years later, there were 600. Photography, when I started, was only 150 years old. It was still relatively new. It was an oddity among the arts. People didn't, you know, it was not being collected on par with a lot of other media, and then that started to change. 150 years is certainly a long time, but it was still, digital photography didn't exist. The craft of photography is something that you studied for decades, you know. I worked in a dark room 16 hours a day. My fingers were black from the chemicals. My skin was sallow. My eyes were dark. But I learned to make a good print.
What did your experience with film photography influence how you approach digital photography now?
There's always something new happening in photography. There's the latest this, the latest that, this camera, that's, you know, I'm sure it's the same in sound engineering, you know? So there was a science to the photography at the time. I really loved math, and I really loved chemistry and science. I always excelled at those in school. They were things that just, I just enjoyed that aspect of it, you know? And then when you started to realize the depth of what you could do in the darkroom, that the layers of silver, you know, micro measurement, what it could stimulate, you know? And, you know, digital photography, I enjoyed being able to take a lot of photographs, not worry about the cost. I don't, what do they call, spray and pray? You know, I don't photograph everything and hope I can find something in an edit. I'm trying to make a photograph, not take a photograph. The democratization of photography is a wonderful thing. You know, the things that we're able to see around the world because everyone has a camera is a remarkable thing. But the photography I do is a little different than that. It's like, I think a poet might think, you know, there's an economy, there's a simplicity, there's a tightness, you know, and you still have to get to that, whether it's digital or film, you still have to, you know, it goes much deeper than just snapping, you know, just pushing a button. And that's the difference, you know, for me. I mean, my best assistants know film photography. They understand in a classical sense, and I think it matters in the craft of photography. It's very important to me. They understand that. And, you know, stuff is what it is. And that's the way I don't go removing, adding, you know, it's not a purity of any sort, but it's just the way that I was educated in photography.
So what kind of, we call it post-production, what kind of work do you do to the photograph after it's been taken?
So what I'll do is I'll take a photograph, I'll adjust the color. I will do the same things I was taught in the darkroom. Is it too light? Is it too dark? Is it too hard? Is it too soft? Would minor cropping help it, you know? The photograph doesn't work. Why? Robert Capa said, because I'm not close enough. You know, George Tice, my mentor, for whom I've worked almost 8 years, you know, gave me a very concise, he was a wonderful teacher, gave me a very, very concise list of things to consider so that if I went through that list, I could forget the rest. The more rules you know, the better you are at breaking those rules and getting beyond that, you know? So the process in a lot of ways is very, very similar. I don't have to send the images out to make a print. I still edit, you know, if we go downstairs to my office, I still edit on a large board, moving images, much like a filmmaker might. You know, I sequence them and I try to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's the same thing. And I don't care what the mechanism, the tool's not going to change what I see. No, I just know, you know, everything is second nature to me at this point. You know, 50 years, a camera is just an extension. I know the things to go through to get what I want. And I suffer a lot to get it, you know, I do. I mean, it causes anxiety, it causes depression, it causes all of the things. You know, if you are not getting to the core of what you're trying to do, then it's frustrating. You know, the suffering is all relative. You know, we're sitting in a nice place overlooking a beautiful mountain. It's all relative. You don't have to go very far to realize how lucky I am to do this. You know?
So what brought you here?
We were invited by some friends who had a house in Fleischmann's to come skiing for the weekend. And I'm from Bayonne, New Jersey. We didn't ski much. And the first time I did ski, I wore blue jeans and got wet and froze and all that stuff. So we went skiing. I had a great time. The next week, we had rented a house in Arkville. We did that for 5 years before we found land, waited 3 more years, and then built a house. So I came here for the skiing, but I stayed for the other 3 seasons as well, although a couple of months I could do without.
So this beautiful book that just came out, Country Life, Homes of the Catskill Mountains and Hudson Valley, is certainly not your first book. Tell me about the other picture books. I don't know if you'd call them picture books, coffee table books. Is that pejorative?
They're
but it is a nice book for a coffee table because it's beautiful imagery to thumb through.
Yeah, books as objects, I think, they're things I enjoy. You know, having a good book around, and you know, we have a lot of books and they move around, and, you know, so it's just a book. I've done books on the Greek islands and the country of Greece. I have done a book on the photographs inspired by the history of voting rights. You know, they're kind of varied. I'm just a photographer. I'm not an interiors photographer. I'm not an architectural photographer. I'm not a landscape photographer. I am just a photographer. And I photograph a lot of things. I don't want to be pigeonholed. I just enjoy the world as a big entity. And I want to look at things close. I want to look at things macro, micro. I am a sap, you know. I am a romantic. I get emotionally involved, you know, with Greece. I saw a way of life disappearing. You know, I was, you know, I was in my early 30s when I started. And, you know, this way of life was disappearing. It was mournful to me. So I made photographs that were about all of these elements, silence, the sea, all of the things that I experienced, and turned this little book of poems, almost visual poems. And I did that. And then the economic crisis in Greece in 2008, through 2013, it went on and on and on in Greece. And I had been going there for many, many years, and my kids thought they were Greek. The recession in the United States was, you know, difficult. It was really difficult for a lot of people. In Greece, it was devastating. I get involved in these things, and then, you know, I wind up wanting to tell a story about it. I was appalled by the 2016 election. I have an assignment in Alabama near Selma, went to Selma, and just thought, like, you know, how is it possible that this place that still looks like 1930s Walker Evans photograph is still dealing with, you know, after all of this time, they are still struggling over voting rights. And to stand in the place where John Lewis was beaten, that we all know, just like January 6th, we all saw it with our, or at least I did. I just thought that, you know, I want to do what I can with the medium I have to try to do something. You know, photography is a great social tool, as Elliot Porter has talked about. You know, it's a propaganda device in a lot of ways. I have addressed the environment in a book on the Mayanus River Gorge, voting rights, addressing the way people live is, you know, this book is a pretty book, and I'm fine doing a pretty book. I try to sneak a message in here and there. But I think we all need a respite from the heaviness, man. It's just, I mean, that's why living here is so important to me, you know, because I might spend 23 and a half hours inside this house, but the half hour that I will get outside is just like, you know, it's incredible what it does to you, you know? You know, if I go to the city, I'm crawling out of my skin after 36 hours, you know? And as much as I enjoy it, I want to go home.
Stay tuned for part two of our interview with Bill Abranowitz right after this. Cat's Cast is made possible by a grant from the Nicholas J. Juried Family Foundation and by local sponsors like Briars and Brambles Books, the go-to independent book and gift store in the Catskills, located in Wyndham, New York, right next to the pharmacy, just steps away from the Wyndham Path. Open daily. For more information, visit briarsandbramblesbooks.com or call 518-750-8599. And by Ulster Savings Bank, with locations throughout the Mid-Hudson Valley, including right here in Phoenicia and Woodstock. Call 866-440-0391 or visit them at ulstersavings.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Back in Margaretville, I asked photographer Bill Abranowitz about his new book, Country Life, Homes of the Catskill Mountains and Hudson Valley, and how he chose the 20 homes featured inside.
I started at the Thomas Cole House. That's the first house I had photographed specifically to this book. It was going to be about the Catskills. Then the publisher suggested, let's do both sides of the river. So the line went from the Delaware River to the Berkshires through Olana, and that, you know, pretty much stayed on that. I veered a little bit, but that was the idea.
Is there a common thread?
Creativity. These are all, everyone in this book has an element of creativity in the way that they live or their occupation. You know, there's writers, there's set designers, architects, photographers. You know, it's a wide range, but there's all an element of creativity.
In the introduction to the book, Bill writes of their discovery of the Catskills in the 1970s. We had found our own seasonal rental, a quintessential ski shack with an ornery porcupine who resided just a few inches below our poorly insulated floor. The house was always filled with friends.
exhausted from skiing and comfortable in our long johns. We spent the long, dark hours of winter in front of the fire with games, pizza, and movies. I think that that's a common entry point for a lot of people who come up here,
yeah.
That kind of getting away from it all, weekend, just have fun experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you been able to retain that sense of discovery and fun, or life take over and it becomes a place where you live, but not necessarily taking advantage of those things that the Catskills offers?
Living here full time, I'm still working. I have trips scheduled every week. So when I come home, we try to entertain as much as we can. We have the wonderful Zetas and Otis in Margaretville. We can get out and socialize. So that replaces it to, we didn't have that,
Yeah, new places, right?
New places.
Wine bar,
right, restaurants, really. We have Balkan food. We have a Korean place. I mean, it's just an astonishing thing that, the internationality of the world is happening in a place that didn't have the internationality, There is a flowing back and forth between old and new here, and I think it's wonderful. I still get a season's pass at Bel Air. We take advantage. We hike. My wife is, quite an outdoors person, so she's out there all the time. Yeah, we take advantage of it. It's good living here. It's good living here,
Some of the houses that are featured in this book, one of the things I noticed that I thought was really neat was some of the outbuildings.
Yeah.
Alan and Peter's house, the outbuildings, I think that's the one that had the kind of path that links them together.
Yeah, Alan Wansenberg, who is a really talented architect, and Peter Kelly, a landscape designer, about 15 years ago, I was asked by Architectural Digest to photograph these cabins that he had built on this property. And they were all, self-sustained, composting toilets, off the grid, wonderfully designed cabins, and they lived in those for years. There were three of them. He was developing the land in a conservation wise way, and then later built this house, the main house that's in the book. But yeah, those little cabins, I mean, for most people, that's all you need. Yeah. That's all, why go on from there? It's just perfection,
And then we had some houses that have quite a history. It's funny because the titles of the chapters or the sections of the houses are the people's names.
Right.
And then I come to one that says Maria and Thomas Cole, and I thought that sounds familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Thomas Cole's home.
Right.
And then Isabel and Frederick Church, their home as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we know Olana as Frederick Church's home. We know the Thomas Cole site as the Thomas Cole site, But, when we were doing this, we realized, this is about the home. So Thomas Cole didn't just, he wasn't the only one involved in this home. His wife, Mariah, and the same with Isabel and Frederick Church, I mean, it's like the civil rights movement, We know all the men, but man, there were a heck of a lot more in the way of women, behind those men. But we know the men's names.
Hmm. See, I even mispronounced Mariah.
I'd learned that Saturday. Yeah. So,
okay.
So that's it's all good. I'm just passing it on.
And the text that accompanies these, did you write that or?
This book was done with my son Xander, who lives in Richmond. Xander is a writer, and I can write, but he's a better writer than I am. And so I would come back with a notebook and jot down my the senses of that day, and then pass them on to him. And just it was just a list, really, and he wrote it in my voice. And who better than a son to write it in a father's voice? It was a great, great opportunity for us.
Xander writes of homeowners Jessica and Tim, "The Catskills are a study in contrasts. The winters are long, cold, and dark. The summers are brief, warm, and beautiful. There's a certain intensity of green that arrives each spring, and every year it comes as a surprise. How can this barren landscape unlock such life? And in winter, conversely, how can this Eden simply vanish?" The Saugerties' home of Jessica and Tim possesses a similar quality, manipulating light and dark in a way that isn't so much disorienting as intoxicating.
Yeah. He's a good writer. This is the third book I've done with him.
And light comes back in again, so I think that's a key component, not only of design,
yeah,
but Photography is nothing but light, right?
Tophos, P-H-O-S, Greek for light, you know, the study of light. That's what it's about, light. I had to do a questionnaire for someone, and they asked, what's one accessory that is absolutely necessary in an interior? And I said, good light. You know, you could have nothing, but if you have good light, you have everything. You know, acclimating your house towards light is like feng shui, you know, for me. I want the sun rising on my bedroom, and I want to be able to see the sunset, and I want the house warmed in the winter from the south, and, you know, all those things.
And as I get older, I need more and more of it to actually just see.
Oh, yeah.
Read.
Oh, my, I know. I'm really kind of into, like, keeping things nice and dim. And my wife, she's got them cranked up. And, you know.
Another home, Jennifer and Christopher's house, is like a designer treehouse.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a remarkable house. Built by an architect, I believe, in the 90s. And they were coming up, and he started looking, and they found this, you know, he's a fisherman, and they found this beautiful home in outside of town of Roscoe. It is a total treehouse. It goes up and up and up.
They found it that way. They didn't build that.
They did not build it, yeah, but they took it back. You know, they just started taking care of it in a different way, and they live up here full time. They have a place in the city still, but... And he now is the president of the board of the Catskill Arts Space.
Where is that?
In Livingston Manor. If you've not been there, I would highly recommend it. It's top flight.
One more home that struck me. I mean, they all struck me, but Andrea and Clark. It says here, built with wood and stone, scavenged from crumbled walls and topped by a vertiginous steeple, the structure epitomizes Clark's belief that a house is a livable sculpture. He started constructing it in the northern Catskills town when he was only 19.
Yeah.
What's the backstory there?
Well, I don't know the complete story of it, but he started building this house when he was 19. He's, I think, 70 now. It's still not done. I know his wife, Andrea, who was a stylist, now owns the little stone house in Delhi. And Andrea's sensibility is, you know, to me, some of the most beautiful. You know, the things that she considers in the collection and curation of an object. And this house, when I saw it, on the outside, it's like, you know, something from The Hobbit. And on the inside, you're in Japan, you're in the living room, it's like being in a ryokan in Kyoto. And in the upstairs rooms or at the entrance, it's this fantasy, Cycladic Greek architecture of smooth white walls and curves, and, you know, and then that undulates into wood. And it's just, you know, it's as living a house as I have seen. You know, my friend in Greece designs with the landscape. He just moves, you know, in a fluid line. And that's what Clark did in a certain way. You know, he built the structure, he topped it off, and then I don't know how he did it. It's just stunning.
I have one specific question about a photograph. Gary and Christopher's house, the tiles around the fireplace, first of all, my grandmother had tiles, or still does, in the house where she lived. And she created them. She painted them all.
Wow.
So I hope that those get held on to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, insist on that one.
And then that same picture, the sunlight filtering through the window, that portion of it looks very much like a painting. How did you achieve that?
Well, it's glass. It's their glass. You know, you're going to be cold in that house in the winter. But boy, when light comes through that glass, it has bubbles. It has movement. And it does something. It gives a painterly quality.
Yeah. We're down to the acknowledgments now. We're moving through this book.
Okay.
And you say, I dedicate this book to my father, William. He would have loved this place. Can you tell me about your dad and why you dedicated the book to him?
Yeah. My father was an operating engineer. He became an operating engineer. He was, you know, holding down a couple of part-time jobs, cleaning a laundromat, delivering bread. He was a milkman, studying to become an operating engineer, had four kids, lived in a small apartment in Bayonne, New Jersey. And, you know, he was an alcoholic, and he was dead by the time I was 17. My mother was left at the age of 35 with four kids, and totally busted. You know, I didn't realize how busted. And for 50 years, well, 40 maybe, I gave up kind of dwelling heavily, darkly on it. It took a long time to reconcile that, you know? It took a long time. I would not mention my father. If I did, I talked about him in the most demeaning terms. And I remember going to Lake George when I was a kid and how happy he was, you know? There was a lot of beer involved, but I remember how happy he was. And I was only small, you know? And so I after struggling with all of this for 40 or so years and watching my own life progress, you know, and struggling with certain things myself, I started to reconcile with him, you know, that it was a sickness, that it was a disease, that he was not well, that he had a lot of pressure, and that I'm sitting in a really nice house in Margaretville overlooking the New Kingston Valley because of certain things that he gave me, you know. And so with this book, I sort of thought, okay, you know, you're 67, time to flush that one. So I tried to, you know. Yeah, there's still remnants, but I'm reconciled, you know. I'm reconciled. Time to move on. If you can't move on at this age, you know, it's like you're in trouble, man. You're in deep trouble. What I thought was a little traumatic thing when I was 17 took 40 years to reconcile. So it wasn't so little, but it drove me. I mean, at my father's funeral, I remember saying to an aunt of mine that I'm going to do books. And so that's what I've been doing, you know, books.
Many thanks to Bill Abranowitz and Andrea Raisfeld for inviting us into their Catskill Mountains home. Bill signed a copy of Country Life for us, and we're giving it away to one lucky listener. Might be you. Just click the link in the show notes to enter, and we'll announce a winner in our next episode. Thanks to production intern Molly Zolden, who recorded this interview. This episode was supported by the 52-mile Catskill Mountains Scenic Byway, following New York State Route 28 through the heart of the Central Catskills. For maps, itineraries, and links to area restaurants, shops, and accommodations, visit scenickatskills.com. And by the Mountain Eagle, covering Delaware, Greene, and Schoharie counties, including brands for local regions like the Windham Weekly, Schoharie News, and Catskills Chronicle. For more information, call 518-763-6854 or email mountaineaglenews@gmail.com. I'm your host, Brett Barry. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.